a Thursday night football matchup that had everybody on pins and needles all the way down to the very end of the game. And in quarterback room, we're really going to talk about head coaches, position openings, some shocking revelations from C-Rob on what jobs are actually the most appealing. We're going to get to that and all that more. It's time for Inside Coverage. Charles Robinson, I'm Jason Fitz. It's Inside Coverage on an early Friday edition. And you know what? I'm still feeling the joy down in my heart last night, C-Rob, as we watched a reminder that Dan Campbell has got a set of stones on him that is like, and it's funny, like, we always talk about identity, right? But I keep thinking about how there are certain guys that just get benefit of the doubt because we bought into who they are. We buy into the results. We buy into the personality. We see this all the time. Risky coaches, we will critique. Even if they're right, we will critique their strategy over and over and over again. Dan Campbell has just become such a beloved figure, and the Lions are so beloved that we're looking, everybody's looking at, of course he went for it on fourth down. Like, the Lions get an improbable win out of a gutsy call by Dan Campbell. And I just kept thinking, this proves how much different the Lions are today, because they now get something they've never gotten before, which is benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I mean, it's pathological how crazy he is when it comes to the risks. Like, it's in a game where you went for it deep in your own territory, you didn't make it, and the result was the Packers taking over and scoring 7 points, which is just, it feels devastating, right? Like, we're used to in most NFL football games, when a coach makes a significant error like that, which in an isolated case would be considered historically just an unbelievably significant error, we're used to it completely changing the complexion of the game, and often teams won't recover from that. Like, it's just such a gut punch that they won't recover. Not only do the Lions recover, but then Dan Campbell, as you said, again, late against the Packers on 4th and inches, when he could have just kicked a field goal and dealt with the remaining clock with the Packers, which would have been, what, less than a minute left. Dan Campbell goes for it. Jared Goff gets his foot stepped on, you know, falls enough to hard plant a knee into the ground, and yet is able to get the ball into David Montgomery's basket, and obviously David Montgomery runs for the first down, and it's just this euphoric moment for the Detroit Lions. But I was screaming. I'm like, this is crazy. I'm like, there's no way they're going for it. Like, I'm yelling. I'm like, they're clearly just trying to draw them off sides. And then when the ball snapped, I was like, oh my God, like, what are you doing? Like, I'm just losing my mind. And as someone who started his career covering the Lions when they were just the, you know, they were horrible. It was awful. I mean, it covered the Marty Morningweg, Matt Millen era. The 2 years of that I covered, they won 5 games, you know, 5-27. The god awfulness of that to kind of where they are now, 11 straight wins, a playoff, they clinch a playoff berth, to be 12-1 is insane. This team is, again, they've gotten cocky. And at times, I think they've gotten a little bit too big for their britches. But I still think it's a team that everybody has to root for, you know, going into this next offseason. Not quite like last year. Now there's a little bit more of a villain, I think, shadow on them than there was last year, because it's not new now. Now it's them repeating themselves and maintaining this stance as a Super Bowl favorite. But I'm more excited than ever, by the way, to see that Buffalo Bills game when Josh Allen and the Lions match up.
I just think it's interesting because, I mean, Brandon Staley got to the point with the Chargers. And look, it didn't work over and over and over again. We know that. But Brandon Staley got to the point where he could call a play on third down and we'd be sitting there saying, well, this idiot's going to blow it on fourth down. And to your point, the Lions could have just easily kicked the ball, had the game in hand.
They have a good kicker. They have a good kicker. Like, what's going on?
The fact that they could have easily just made this simple and then they didn't. But I was also thinking about the fact that it wasn't simple, because this matchup, a good matchup, but I'm not sure where I am. And, you know, frankly, Frank Schwab and I were texting about this last night. I'm not sure where to be on Jordan Love right now, because Jordan Love looks like he's good. It's not that he doesn't look. I want to stress this because I don't think Jordan Love, like, we make everything either great or sucks. I think there's a whole middle ground here. Like, sure. Jordan Love looks like he's good, but man, you just mentioned can't wait for that Bills matchup. I don't look at Jordan Love and think, Josh Allen. I don't look at Jordan Love and think, Joe Burrow. I look at Jordan Love and think, good. Like, maybe a little bit better than a Derek Carr. Like, he'll make some plays that'll win you games. He'll make some plays that'll lose you games. And if I'm Green Bay, man, I'm looking at this thing saying, golly, I need a little bit more out of my paid like a superstar quarterback to win these sorts of games.
I was shocked at the end of the game when you look at it and you see what the score is and you go, well, geez, he only threw 20 pass attempts. But then you realize that 14 of the points that the Packers scored came off of, there was a Jared Goff turnover deep in Lions territory. So short field they're working on and they score. And then you had the fourth down that Dan Campbell went for deep in his own territory, doesn't get it, which is a turnover. Effectively, to me, it's a coaching turnover, right? And they scored a touchdown and a short field off of that. So when you look at the Packers, the number of points the Packers score in this game, you think, oh, prolific. Like, oh, it was a prolific offensive performance. It really wasn't, you know? And we've seen the Packers, particularly recently, shift very hard into the running game and Josh Jacobs. Last night, what I wondered was, is Romeo Doubs like this important to the production of Jordan Love? Because clearly Christian Watson, I think, he had a really good game other than the fumble. Obviously, that was a really costly turnover. Dontayvion Wicks, who I really thought was going to be an X factor for the wide receiving core, has had horrible hands this season, you know, especially early on, was just dropping stuff left and right, became almost an unplayable piece in that offense. Last night, he was better. Was a contributing piece, but it still felt like there was something missing in that passing game. And it, you know, I think it was a balanced offense, but it just was not as prolific as what I expected, particularly, and I think even on balance in 2024, I expected a lot more from Jordan Love in the passing offense coming out of last year, right? The second half of last season in the playoff performance, I'm like, oh my God, like this is Jordan Love low key coming into the season. Like, some people are like, he's a dark horse MVP candidate, right? Like, this guy could throw for 5,000 yards and 40 touchdowns in this offense. I'm with you. I still think he's a really good player. He has not taken last year's run and elevated his level of play to that shelf and kept it there. I don't want to say it's concerning for Green Bay. It's still a great team, by the way. I don't want to bag out Green Bay, right? Like, this is a playoff team.
They lost by three to the number one seed in the NFC. Like, there's no shame in it.
Yeah, not at all. But Fitz, I'll ask you this. The Lions don't have – defensively, can you lose anymore? Like, Aleem McNeil goes out last night, the middle of the defense. It was just – I mean, it was Charmin soft as soon as Aleem McNeil exited the game. And I'm sitting there and I'm staring at it. And then – Brian Branch at one point's banged up late in the game. I'm like, you can't lose anybody else. Like, there were times during the game where I'm seeing guys and they turn around and make a tackle and turn around. And I'm like, I don't even know who that guy is. Like, there are players on their defense playing right now where I have to familiarize myself with where these guys came from. Like, Jamal Adams coming off the scrap heap, right? Who can't do really anything but rush the passer. That's it. That's you put a couple packages in, you tell them, go get the quarterback. They're going to throw it. Go get the quarterback. That's what we're expecting from you. Or tackle the ball carrier. Nothing else. Definitely don't drop in coverage. I don't know what else that defense can do.
I think that defense is at like a hold my beer spot. Like, when we sit here and apologize for the 49ers underachieving because of injuries, I think the Lions defense could turn around and say, oh, I'd like to show you a list, good sir. Right? Like, you can start to look at it and think about how much change we've seen to the Lions, to the fact that, to your point, last night they did not play a particularly clean game at times. They were not as dominant as they usually are at times. They are decimated on the defensive side of the ball, and they still won. Like, second game in a row where the Lions haven't really looked great, but they've turned around and won the football game. And, you know, I just sort of laugh at that because I can't even imagine what the Lions would be like if they were healthy right now. Like, I can't even imagine if Aiden Hutchinson, and this isn't even just an Aiden Hutchinson conversation. Like, we say all the time about bad football teams that depth is going to be tested. And I think this is sort of living, breathing, eating proof that your really good football teams are built with a better level of depth, their second and third stringers can step in. Like, next man up is a cute concept if you've got a really good GM and a really strong organization. Next man doesn't work. Next man up doesn't work if your team sucks, right? And so it's just, I watched the Lions last night and thought, man, this wasn't the best game from the Packers, and it wasn't the best game from the Lions, and the Lions still got a win. That has to speak something to where Detroit is.
Yeah, and again, if you take away the two deep in their territory turnovers, the Goff interception, the Dan Campbell going for it on fourth and not getting it, the defense limited the Packers to 17 points that were not a function of giving the ball away inside your own 30, right? And or basically at your own 30. So that's a pretty damn good defensive performance. It speaks pretty well. I'm not banging on Aaron Glenn at this point, right? Because you're sitting there and you're watching what he's producing a pass rush with. And again, there's just guys where I'm like, they signed this guy off of a practice. Like, I look at, you know, Jamal Adams, you're like, they literally signed him to the practice squad and immediately activated him. And he's a player who, when I saw him in Tennessee, I was like, oh my God. Like, I don't know that there's really a play left in this guy. And then I think it was like the first snap he's in the game, he's in on a quarterback pressure. The first snap he's in the game, you know? And so Aaron Glenn's dialing up, I think, everything he can defensively, particularly from a pressure standpoint. I think from the standpoint of really good football and wanting to see the Lions at least closer to what they could potentially be, I hope they get some of these guys back. They're going to have players returning from injury. There's not everybody's been lost for the season. It's going to take some time, but I think as we get closer to the postseason, that defense will be in much better shape, I think, than it is now from a talent standpoint. But as you said, it speaks to where the Lions are, that they can play a really good team, a really good offense, be completely undermanned on defense, and still feel like they were very much, I don't want to say in complete command of that game, but at no point, and I'm curious if you felt this way, at no point when I watched did I feel like Detroit won't be able to respond. I just never felt like every time they got hit, I was like, okay, the offense is their best defense. That offense is so good, they'll be able to respond. And that's ultimately what ended up happening.
Even when they're not running the ball as well with Jahmyr Gibbs as I think they should. It is funny how many little things for the Lions I didn't feel like were going right, but you're right. The whole time I thought, all right, they're gonna figure out a way to win this. Let me ask you this. If you had to bet Frank's house, we're gonna bet Frank's house today since he's not here to defend us. If you were going to bet Frank's house right now today, Lions or Eagles to represent the NFC in the Super Bowl, who would you take?
Man, right now, today, if the Lions are this iteration of that defense, it's hard for me. I think it's remarkably close, even with all the injuries and the problems. I would probably take the Eagles, only because I think the Eagles are up and running in a way where they're healthier, right? When you look at the Eagles, they're a much more balanced team offensively and defensively than they were earlier in the season. I think Jalen Hurts is playing much better football at this stage. I think the running game is much better, both from the standpoint of Hurts and the RPO games. Saquon Barkley he's going to be in the MVP conversation. He's definitely going to, you could argue it's him and Josh Allen right now down the stretch for the MVP. So it's a team not only that I think has gotten better defensively, they have high level cornerbacks, right? That's another thing too that I think is an ace in the hole for them, is that they, you know, between Quinyon Mitchell and Darius Slay, you're talking about having corners that can survive on an island in the playoffs. Both of those guys can. So I just think I would give the Eagles the nod at this point, but I think the picture is going to change for Detroit. As I said, I think defensively you're going to get some pieces back that are missing right now, and they will be healthier, you would think, getting closer to the playoffs. Although that said, every game somebody goes down, you know, Lee McNeil goes down with a head injury. If you told me, let's say next week, Brian Branch goes out, right? To me, then I'm like, okay, you can't take Aiden Hutchinson off the field and then Brian Branch and have it be a survivable event with all these other injuries that have happened in between. So I'd give the Eagles a nod right now, but I do think that can change as Detroit's health gets better. Are you taking the Lions over the Eagles at this stage?
I'm taking the Eagles, but here's what's interesting to me. I trust the Eagles defense to get a stop at this point. Like the middle of the right. Eagles defense particularly, and then their linebackers, you mentioned their secondary too. At every possible level, they've got game wreckers, right?
They've
so
guys,
I believe that makes them more capable of getting a stop. But I trust the Lions coaching staff more than I trust the Eagles coaching staff to get me one drive for points. So that's the weird part of this. Like, you know, because I'm looking, and I can't believe I'm saying this, right? Like, we're looking at a Dan Campbell situation, and obviously Ben Johnson is highly regarded for a reason. But I've just gotten to the spot where I feel like if you need a drive, Goff's going to give it to you. Like, you are going to get a smart drive at the quarterback position that utilizes all those weapons that they have in a way that I trust a little bit more than I trust Sirianni to be able to dial up the right thing for Jalen Hurts. We still have – Hurts has played much better the last month of the season. I think we can go back now to his statements at the beginning of the year if we don't know our identity yet, we haven't been healthy. I think that's really fair and really accurate. Yeah. But I do think that Hurts still puts the ball at risk a little bit more. I like the Lions to just to get the score at the end of a close game.
And don't you feel like I think the 5-interception game with Goff where you're like, this is insanity. And when that happens to a quarterback typically in a season, it's not a recoverable event. You will see it in their play the next week and the week. You're just because you're like shell shocked anytime a quarterback throws 5 interceptions, but you usually lose those games. And Detroit came back in that game and beat the Houston Texans on the road. And Jared Goff has an ability about him at this stage of his career to not be shell-shocked by a 5-interception performance, but also a really bad interception deep in your territory, like against a team like Green Bay, where when that happened and they scored a touchdown and the cameras are panning to Goff, you know it's costly. I know it's costly. You're looking. He's clearly pissed off about it. But then what does he do? He comes out and then, you know, you see a point in the game where he's reeled off like 13, 14 straight completions. You know, and it's so he can make a mistake and still recover from it. And I'm not saying that Jalen Hurts can't, but I do think there's an element of Goff at this point in his career. You're a veteran. You've gone through a lot of different scenarios. You truly, clearly believe that the team believes in you. So when you make a mistake, you're not sitting there questioning yourselves going, man, is the coaching staff still going to trust me? Yeah, clearly they're still going to trust you. They trusted you when you threw 5 interceptions against the Houston Texans. So, yeah, when you get into a playoff scenario, if you said to me, okay, Goff throws a really bad interception, Jalen Hurts throws a really bad interception, which guy survives it just from the standpoint of where they are in their careers, what they've experienced, and what they've shown us in recent history? I would say it's Goff. I would pick Goff in that scenario. I'd say he's the one that can recover from a mistake. Now, that said, you know, the Eagles have a number of surrounding pieces that can help, you know, Hurts get over the hump as well. But I would take off in that situation.
I think, C-Rob, though, it changes. It impacts their play calling a lot, too. Like, one thing that we just have to continue to accept is that Philly's play calling as an offense will always be different because of the tush push. Like, they know they can convert. So they're in 4-down territory all the time. I do believe that the Lions' play calling is more aggressive, and their situational football, let me say it that way. I believe the Lions' situational football is more aggressive because they know they have the horses to get themselves out of trouble. So all of a sudden, you can take risks. You can go for a 4th-and-whatever deep in your own territory because you're like, I don't care. We're the Lions. We can score on anybody. We'll be just fine. I wonder how much when you get into the playoffs, if Dan Campbell and Ben Johnson and the Lions as an organization can stay as loose in the playoffs as they are right now, that speaks to what you're talking about.
Yeah, and that's a good question. I mean, I was at the NFC title game. Dan Wetzel from obviously our columnist at Yahoo, we're sitting there. And when Dan went for it instead of kicking the field goal, right, in that game, and then I think the next series out, Jahmyr Gibbs fumbled it. Like, it was the second half of that game, and you felt like, okay, the Lions have this in hand. They're going to go to the Super Bowl. And then Campbell continue to stay aggressive. It didn't work out. And then Jahmyr Gibbs fumbled. And next thing you know, momentum had changed. And you're sitting there and you're staring at the decision. And I remember Dan saying to me, Dan Wetzel, he was like, he should just kick the field goal. If he kicks the field goal, they probably win this game. And that was probably true. So you wonder if, and again, he's gone back to being the same aggressive guy he is. He's very consistent in that way. I wonder if when we get into the stakes of the postseason, if that creeps into his mind where he goes, do I stay the course no matter what? Is it damn the torpedoes, you know, and just keep, just stick to this mentality that I have, or do I rein it in just a little bit and augment maybe some of these decisions? I will say this though, about the fourth down stuff that he does. There is an underrated or underwritten part of that. We sit there and we stare at it and we go, that's so crazy, man, he's got huge balls, all these things. The underwritten part of it is that is so demoralizing for a defense. If you're out there and you're like, this guy's going for it on fourth and three, like deep in his own territory, you're like, and then they convert it. As a defense, you're like, and after a while, when you talk to players who are out there, if they're honest with you, they'll tell you that when a team continually is going for it on fourth down and making it, you feel like you're constantly under attack as a defense. You're like, we're not dealing with a three down team. We're dealing with a four down team. We have to defend four downs regularly. This is not a team that punts on fourth down. They're just going to go for it. So we have to be out here and limit them to less than 10 yards on four tries, which doesn't sound crazy, but for defenses that are out there, particularly as the game wears on, that can be mentally just so difficult to deal with, especially when it's not, as you said, a fourth and one tush push where you're like, okay, well, it's fourth and one, it's fourth and inches, whatever. No, this guy's going for it on fourth and two. He's going for it on fourth and three. He's going for it on fourth and four. And you're like, this is crazy. Like, this is insane. You can't go for it on fourth and three in your own territory. And Dan Campbell will do that.
Yeah. All I say is I remember as a kid watching football. And if you held him to fourth and one, you were like, here we go. We're getting the ball back.
Yeah,
we're getting the ball back. You know, get the ball back, and now you get nothing. No. In fact, I remember when I first started playing Madden a bunch, if I played against somebody on Madden that didn't punt on fourth and short, I'd stop playing against them. I'm like, if you're not going to play real here, like I'm not going to take the ball and just constantly like be up 60 to nothing because you're not playing real football. Now, real football is, well, actually, the analytics say that you should go for it here. So I don't know, man. Like
I call it the Danalytics because I don't know that really is analytics. I think it's Dan Campbell's. Do you even feel like it's an analytic decision at this point?
An
analytics decision? No, I think it's Dan. I think it's the Danalytics.
Do we think anybody's going up to Dan and being like, hey, coach, the numbers, that's me. Yeah. Walking up and being like, coach, the numbers say, he looks over and he's like, hey, man, shut up. All right, we're going for it. Gut feel, going for it.
Like, it is. This is who we are, right? Like, that's, I'm like, I don't know that that's measurable, Dan. Like, I don't know that you can sit here and figure out what kind of data point is that? This is who we are. But it also kind of ends up being real at the end of a game when you listen. Those post-game locker room speeches, to me, I love watching with him, but there is an element of it that's repetitive. And the repetitive element is, we're built for this. This is who we are. You know, this is this. We come to, it's like the same thing over and over again, but you're like, yeah, it's kind of true. Yeah. You know, like he's not, what he is saying is it's ambiguous. It's big. There's not a lot of data tied to it. It's just the mentality and the soul of what he's created there. So it's remarkably fun to watch. That's for sure.
Well, what's amazing is that in year two, Dan Campbell started 1-6, and we all thought that that hire was going to look absolutely stupid. And now it looks like one of the best.
I was like, fire this guy. Like, this is terrible. Like, he had to be fired. I mean,
The biting kneecaps, we forget all of that now. And there's a message of hope in there because, frankly, if you get your quarterback, if you get your coach hire right, you got it made. So when we come back, quarterback room this week, C. Rob has ranked the expected NFL head coaching openings by their quarterback situation. And all I can tell you guys is that I heard this was so shocking, I would not believe it. We will break it down when we come back. Okay, C. Rob, you ranked the expected NFL head coaching openings for Yahoo. And I want to stress here, you rank them solely based on the quarterback situation. So we're not talking about anything else. We're just looking at the quarterback situation. And we're trying to figure out from worst to best of all the teams that are expected to have NFL head coaching openings, based on the quarterback situation, How do they rank? So let's start from the worst, because, by the way, I hate any countdown that starts with number one. If you grew up listening to Casey Kasem, yeah, you know that any proper countdown starts at 40 and goes to one. So what's the worst situation? We'll blow through the first few quickly here. But what's at number seven for you, drum roll, the worst of the situations is?
New York Jets. It's the New York Jets. There's no question that's the New York Jets. And there are seven of these, by the way. So I went through and I said, okay, we obviously have three openings right now. I'm projecting the potential openings that could happen beyond the openings that we currently have. Obviously, the New York Jets job is open. But as you said, and I want to be really clear about this. This is just strictly looking at the quarterback position, not the owner, not the surrounding skill position pieces, not the overall talent of the team. It's literally just, if you're a candidate and you're saying, let me just figure out how I feel about the quarterback spot first and foremost, and I'll rank the teams that way. That's what we're doing here. The New York Jets, Aaron Rodgers, 41 years old. There's cap implications with Aaron Rodgers. It's messy. If you're going into an NFL team and you're saying, all right, I want to take this job over, you have heavy lifting to do at the quarterback spot, because you have to make the decision. Are we moving forward with Aaron Rodgers? We've seen his mentality at this point. It seems pretty clear that he doesn't want to be a New York Jet next season. Seems pretty clear the owner doesn't want him to be a New York Jet. Just from the sheer mess of what's going on with the New York Jets and Rodgers, and the fact that you're tethered to him, and if you're not going to be tethered to him, you have to incur pain, I think it makes the Jets the worst quarterback situation of any opening this offseason.
I also think replacement is tough, right? Because right now, a lot of football left to go. But right now, if the draft were today, the Jets would be the third team picking that needs a quarterback. They would pick sixth, but they would pick behind the Raiders and the Giants. So you're talking about best case scenario in the draft is that we can count on is that they would get the third best quarterback in one of the weakest quarterback classes we can remember in recent memory. That doesn't feel great. And I know Jory made the joke the other day, but like the thought of, is Sam Darnold going to come back to the Jets? We have to look at this and figure out it. I don't think it's Aaron Rodgers, which means you could be looking at a bridge quarterback. And I don't even know that the availability of bridge quarterbacks is really exciting this year either. See, Rob? So I think that's an important part of this context is even if you're anti-Aaron Rodgers, there ain't an easy replacement out there for you for the Jets.
Yeah, that's a really key point too, as you said, the draft position. And I did factor this in as well. It's sort of like fixability. And the Jets have, as you said, low fixability. You're going to get QB3. If you sit where you are, it's very likely the Raiders and the Giants are taking quarterbacks ahead of you. So you end up with QB3 in a pretty weak draft. And QB3 probably in this draft should be drafted near the end of the first round, if not outside of the first round, depending how you feel about this quarterback class. So and if you're like, well, let's trade up. Let's go up and get the number one overall pick. The Patriots will have the pick. If we stop today, you'd be moving up to take the Patriots spot. You have to incur what? Pain. You have to give up capital to go and move. So that's all factored into it. It's a massively messy situation with the Jets, and there's a ton of heavy lifting to do, and there's no great avenue to get that done without incurring cap pain or taking like a substandard piece moving forward.
If I had a marching band with me, I would have them do a drum roll as we say number six, your sixth ranked team. And again, just the quarterback situation.
Yeah, just the quarterback situation. The New Orleans Saints and Derek Carr, I think, are number six. Again, another veteran, right? Derek Carr, at this stage of his career, he's not playing terrible football, right? He's not playing great football. He's very much in the middle. But you're talking about a player. He's 34 years old. And here, let me go through the contract with you. He has a $50.1 million dead cap hit if he's released this offseason. Damn. And then a $28.6 million cap hit if he's released following 2025. So at the very least, you feel like you're tied to Derek Carr through the 2024 season. And the Saints don't have a great cap situation, so he's not easily releasable. It's you're basically staring at Derek Carr and you're saying, that's my guy. It's not Rodgers. It's not like the cap pain is fun to deal with, but he's definitely a guy you can move on with. It's expensive to keep him. It's expensive to dump him. With Carr, it's wildly expensive to dump him at this point, even if you're deciding you're going to split that cap hit over two seasons. So Carr feels like a piece that has to be in place if you're taking over the New Orleans Saints. And I think absolutely that's a net negative. You have an average quarterback at best who's 34, and his, I think not only is his health declining, we're seeing health issues pop up with him, his play is declining as well.
But also, a little bit here, shame on the Saints and shame on Dennis Allen. I don't want to pile on somebody that already lost his job, but Dennis Allen had to know Derek Carr better than 99% of the world. He coached him in Oakland at the time. So, like, he knows him with the Raiders. He knew him with the Raiders, the organization. And this is what's maddening to me sometimes. When you see guys come out and it just doesn't work out, I look at it and say, man, how did everybody in the organization not know that? I realize that you have Sam Darnolds of the world, but if you're going to take the roll of the dice and try and get a Sam Darnold, then you have to have the responsibility if you don't. And frankly, for the Saints organizationally to have decided to not only acquire Derek Carr, but then to sign him to the type of money that made it almost impossible to get out of, like, the number of mistakes made there is just, it has to have consequence. And that's part of why Dennis Allen isn't the head coach, but it's part of why I sit here looking at the Saints and say, man, you did this to yourself. You got a mid quarterback that you overpaid for, and you can't do that. You should have known better. Number five, C-Rob, who do you have at number five?
The New York Giants and Daniel Jones' $22.1 million cap hit. Now, the Giants, for all intents and purposes, if you're just staring at quarterback, you're going, okay, well, it's clean slate, which is good, right? Clean slate to me is great. I think clean slate is really where you want to be at. In this scenario, if you don't have an elite level quarterback or a young guy who's still playing on a rookie contract, those are all positive things. So for the most part, you'd say, all right, the Giants have a clean slate situation, but you have to eat cap. $22.1 million is not wholly insignificant. So there's cap pain you have to deal with. And again, the accessibility, who are you going to be able to choose? It's going to be QB2. It's not QB1 right now. Where, at least where the draft is slotting right now, the Giants are not in position to take the top quarterback in a weak draft, which means you're going to let someone else set the table for you in terms of the piece you have to recover, or you have to leapfrog the Raiders and try to get the number one overall pick, which costs assets. So while it's clean, there's moving parts to the situation with the Giants, and I think that's what downgrades them to five, is both the cap hit and the fact that right now someone else sets your table in terms of the rookie option that you have in the draft.
It's interesting because I was texting Mike Golic Jr. the other day, and he said, kind of stuck in my head, he said, teams are going to wreck their organizations for the next 5 to 10 years by overdrafting in this year's draft.
Yeah,
I keep thinking about that, and I'm trying to find the line. Like, if you're the Giants, and I notice I haven't heard my beloved Raiders name yet here, so if you're the Giants or the Raiders, I acknowledge that you have an issue. That you need a quarterback, and this is a bad draft to need a quarterback in. And frankly, even if you need a quarterback, like in a beautiful world, you say, well, I'll just trade down and get the quarterback later. That's not going to happen. It's there's supply, demand. So I'm looking at two quarterbacks that I think in a normal draft, see, Rob, if we're being honest, if we were working together for the draft this year, in a normal draft, I think they would probably be both be selected, Cam Ward, Shedeur Sanders, in the mid, late teens, early 20s, somewhere in that range. They're instead likely two of these quarterbacks are going to go in the top four picks in the NFL draft. Like, what do you do if you're desperate at the position and it's just a crappy draft?
Yeah, I mean, you can't. A question you have to ask yourself too. Some people would say, "Well, just go get a bridge, right? Let's if you want to draft a rookie quarterback and this wasn't the season, let's wait until 2026." Well, number one, you don't know who's going to be coming out in 2026. I think some people are like, "Well, Arch Manning." We don't know that for sure. What if Arch wants to stay the extra year? Peyton stayed the extra year. Peyton Manning stayed when everybody said there was no way he could. And Arch Manning might sit there and say, I don't want just one season as Texas, as a starter at Texas, to be what I am in college. I want to get the full experience. I want to take at least a second year. And then all of a sudden he's a 2027 draft pick. And you're sitting there going, oh man, we went and got a bridge. We're horrible. And we're up at the top of the draft. And we still don't have that knockout pick that we're hoping for. It's not a great position to be in. People are going to hear this over and over about this quarterback class. People will compare it to the Kenny Pickett draft, right? Where Kenny Pickett ends up being the quarterback who goes off in the first round and then gets traded after his second season in Pittsburgh. They're like, nope, he's a backup. We drafted a backup in the first round. That's the fear, I think, going into this draft. Now, I will say this about the draft process. It tends to push quarterbacks up those boards. We watch the workouts. Let's see what happens in the college football playoff. Maybe you start to feel different about some of these guys, but in a league that needs quarterbacks, they often find ways to overinflate quarterbacks, particularly in a draft, which, by the way, isn't great overall, really. It's just not a great draft overall.
You're right. You just said something, though, that really is rocking my mindset. I can't imagine how disappointed right now NFL teams are that somehow, some way, Colorado and Miami have missed out on the college football playoff. Because yeah, if you have questions about Shadur or Cam, you wanted to see him against the best of the best in a playoff game with all of that heat. Like, you wanted to see how they handled the pressure of the moment, how they handled an away game. Like, all of this could be more evidence for your body of work you're accumulating for the draft. So as much as Colorado fans and Miami fans are already upset their team is not in the college football playoff, I've got to feel like the NFL is devastated. They don't get another data point on two guys that they are trying to figure out if they should warrant drafting at the top of this thing.
No, it's a huge point. It really is. It's a massive missed opportunity, I think, both for those players and for NFL teams. Because I think with both Ward and Shadur Sanders, you're saying, I want to see them in a ratcheted up atmosphere where everything's on the line, all the pressure's there, and see how they ultimately respond, like the way we saw C.J. Stroud respond against Georgia's defense, right? That was one of those things going into C.J. Stroud getting drafted where we were like, okay, here are all these things we don't like about Stroud, but he played lights out against a Georgia defense that was chock full of NFL caliber players. And then he had great, flawless, brilliant workouts. So those were data points that made you feel really good. You want those data points with Cam Ward and Shadur Sanders. You're not going to get it. And for that reason, I actually think Jalen Milroe, Carson Beck, they're going to have a leg up because they get to go out there and showcase this is what we look like when we know we absolutely cannot lose a game. I don't think Beck has really – clearly, he has not lived up to anything this season. A lot of people thought he could be the first overall pick. I do think he has an opportunity now on this stage to at least reverse it a little bit, right? To at least I have teams that are telling me he's not a first round pick. Like, they're like, he's a project. You do not draft him in the first round. I think he could have a little bit of reversal making it to the college football playoff and being able to showcase what he does on this stage for a handful of weeks. But that's a great point. It's the Ward Sanders combination missing out on this playoffs is devastating.
I'll never forget standing on the sideline. Harry Douglas and I were getting ready to do a radio show right after the game. And we were watching that game happen where CJ went off against that Georgia defense. And right before we went live on air, Harry just looked at me and said, the only takeaway from this game is that CJ Stroud just made himself a boatload of money.
Yeah.
And it's like, yep. He did. And you're right. Not having that data point. Wild. Okay. That's 7-6-5, which means we got four more teams to go. We'll go through them after we take a quick break. All right, C-Rob, let's continue the exercise. Quarterback position alone, head coaching openings. Who's number four for you?
The Dallas Cowboys.
Wait, the Dallas Cowboys have an MVP candidate quarterback, and you're telling me that makes them less appealing?
Yeah, this is where people are going to lose their minds. They're going to get pissed about this because they're going to sit there and go, wait a minute, the Raiders haven't come off the board yet. How are you saying that the Dallas Cowboys quarterback makeup is less appealing than the Las Vegas Raiders? Well, there's a reason why, and this is it. Stick with me for a second here. Dak Prescott's going to be 32 years old going into next season. He's now coming off his second season ended by a surgery, cut short by surgery. Both are lower bodies, right? You had the ankle displacement. Now you've got the hamstring surgery. And when you talk to people in the NFL, they think that the prior ankle surgery with Dak made him less prone to making some of the athletic plays he had prior to that happening. Basically, they look at him and they go, you know, as far as running, navigating, he can still do it, but his mentality is not as dynamic as maybe it was before. Now you've got a second one of these events, right? So I think from a health standpoint, I would be nervous if I'm a coach and I'm taking over the Dallas Cowboys and I'm going, okay, Dak's 32, he's starting to get some age on him. And now he's got these two lower body injuries that should be concerning, considering they're stacked up on top of each other. And he had another season where he missed five games with a thumb injury, right? So it's like in the past 5 years, you've seen injuries start to stack up on him. And again, we're getting to the point where age starts to stack up on him. Now, you're going to say to me, he was near MVP in 2023. That's
yes,
true.
Yes, I'm going to say that. Yes.
Absolutely. That's true. But I will suggest this to you. When you look at his entire career, what season is the outlier? The season that's the outlier was when he was an MVP candidate. He had a year where he absolutely maxed out. He reached almost the ceiling. I mean, clearly at this point in his career, it's been the ceiling of his career. Cam Newton did that once with the Carolina Panthers, right? Joe Flacco did that once with the Baltimore Ravens. There are times where good quarterbacks can have ceiling seasons where it convinces you that this is where they're going to stay forever. When Cam Newton was an MVP for the Carolina Panthers, we thought he's going to be an MVP forever. He made it. He did it. He got to the mountaintop. He planted his flag. That's where he lives now. It was not where he lived. Where he lived was a lower level of play, mounting injuries, and ultimately a career that flamed out after his greatest moment. And I would argue to you, 2023 was Dak's greatest moment. And we thought coming into 2024, that's where he lives. He's going to be a top 2-3 quarterback in this league like he was in 2023. Nope, not at all. He regressed back toward what the balance of his career has been. Probably a top 10 quarterback, right? He lives in that neighborhood. He's right on the fringe of that top 10. You can argue a number of players in front of him. Not from a leadership standpoint. He's a great leader. But I'm talking about what he delivers on the field, what he puts on the table in terms of statistics, and then the players' profiles around him, who he raises. I would argue he has not raised the profile of a number of players around him in the Dallas Cowboys offense. I would argue that CeeDee Lamb is an elite-level player, and Dak has not necessarily made him that elite-level player. I think CeeDee Lamb can survive with a number of different quarterbacks. So that, when you add all that in, there's a question for me from a health standpoint, an elevation standpoint, a getting tricked into believing that Dak Prescott's a top 2 or 3 quarterback in the league in 2023. And then there's the money. That, to me, is what buries this job for any coaching candidate that comes in looking at the quarterback spot. Dak has a deal. He's making $60 million a year, right? His cap charge is insane. It strangles the Dallas Cowboys moving forward. You're going to have a multitude of problems with the Dallas Cowboys because you have a quarterback deal that should be Patrick Mahomes. That's what the deal should be. It should be Patrick Mahomes. It should be Lamar Jackson. It should be Josh Allen. He's none of those things. And that's why I think the Dallas Cowboys have to be fourth in the pecking order, just because you have a monster deal and a player who right now, I would say the health and the play is declining when you compare it to 2023.
If this is the version of Dak we're going to get moving forward, the Cowboys are just screwed for the next several years. Like, you can't, we talked about it earlier, you can't invest that kind of money at a quarterback that doesn't live up to that kind of money. So if you're right, and this version of Dak is the new normal version of Dak, the Cowboys, you're right, are absolutely up the creek. The problem for me is that this is just my mind coming into draft coverage, right? If you came to me today and said, hey, your beloved Raiders are going to draft Shedeur Sanders, okay? And you tell me Shedeur is going to be Dak Prescott. Dude, I would take that. I would take that all day and twice on Sunday. I would be absolutely ecstatic if you told me that Shedeur Sanders was going to give me the same production that Dak Prescott has given the Cowboys. So the hard part in my brain is I'm sitting there saying, man, I can either draft somebody that if you told me he'd be Dak, that's a home run. Or I could just have Dak. Like, that's the oversimplification.
Fitz, yeah, that is, though. You're oversimplifying it because you're forgetting about the money. What are you going to pay Shedeur Sanders, Fitz? You're going to pay him a rookie contract, which is really f-ing valuable in the NFL right now. It's extremely valuable to have a guy who's on a rookie contract. It's why Sam Darnold will not be with the Minnesota Vikings next season, because they want to make sure that they take the J.J. McCarthy rookie quarterback and they take advantage of it. It's the reason why you can pay Justin Jefferson $35 million plus per season, because you have a rookie deal to work with. I will take the Dak level play. I don't have a problem with it. I think Dak, like I said, he's a borderline top 10 consistently over the course of his career. You're talking about like a top 10 quarterback, okay? Right on the fringe of the top 10 over the balance of his career, if you put it all together. Absolutely. I'll take that every single day. But give it to me on the cheap money. Don't give it to me telling me he makes more than any other player in the NFL. I don't want to be saddled with that. And especially don't tell me, hey, you're going to get fringe top 10 play for $60 million a season. And oh, by the way, he's now had two seasons ended by surgeries that occurred below the waist, which are not good.
I hear that. My counter is, look, as we've talked about before, I grew up with nothing, right? I grew up poor. When you grow up poor, you grow up on government cheese, right? When you have government cheese and then you have real cheddar, you're like, oh my God, this real cheddar tastes far better. Like, I don't want government cheese. I don't want Will Levis. I'm sorry. It's my weekly hit on Will Levis. But like, what I don't want to do is wake up and be like, well, I drafted a quarterback, but he turned out to be government cheese. I don't want Will Levis in this situation. I want the, even if it's maybe not the best cheddar, even if it's not, you know, the most delightful, even if maybe it's, you know, a little bland. It's not quite as good as they've got at the rich house down the street. It's still better than government cheese. And I am scared to death of getting government cheese. See, Rob, especially this year's draft. So like, I hear you, but also I would be a hypocrite if I didn't disagree with you, because if you told me a month ago that the Raiders, or 2 months ago before Dak signed his deal, if you told me that the Raiders had signed Dak to $60 million a year, I wouldn't have a problem with it, because I'm just tired of not having a quarterback. So like, it's hard for my mind to wrap around the potential of government cheese just because I don't want to have really good cheese, and that's Dak Prescott.
This idea of just signing guys because I'm tired of dealing with, it's insane. That's completely nuts. Just because you're tired of walking.
My team sucks, see, Rob?
Just because you're tired of walking doesn't mean you go and sign up for a Ferrari lease, because you're like, man, I'm just tired of walking. So you know what? Give me the Ferrari lease. I can't afford it. It's going to kill me. It's probably going to ruin my relationship. I'm going to be crippled by it moving forward, but just give me that because I'm tired of walking. It's just, it's a dumb argument to make. It's a poorly
constructed argument. Have 3 months in a Ferrari and then you're broke, or you could have the next 10 years in one of those little like hover rounds that, you know, people are going around in the Walmart in. Which one are you going on? Like, I'm going for three months in the Ferrari.
I love the government cheese analogy where you're basically saying, I don't want the free government cheese. I want the $60 million cheddar, which, by the way, is not as good as it was the year before or the year before that or the year before that, and seems to be getting worse every single year and has problems. And there's mold in the middle. But give me that $60 million cheddar because, man, it's just better than this crappy government cheese. And by the way, if you're a head coach taking over a position, Raiders, whoever, you have to have the confidence in yourself that you're going to get it right. Right? Like, you have to have the confidence in yourself that you can coach the quarterback, pick the right quarterback, all these different things. I just think the Cowboys are a far worse quarterback spot than people want to believe, because we're so fixated on 2023 as being Dak Prescott. And in totality, when you look at everything, that is the outlier, and it has to be concerning. And again, I'm not going to get into all the pieces around Dak, but eventually, you will get into that side of the ledger and you're going to see, offensive line's not as good as it's been for the majority of his career. The running game's not as good as it's been for the majority of his career. The wide receiving core has one guy. You know, it's without even getting to the surrounding pieces, I'm concerned. But then when we step into that, it's a whole other argument. So absolutely, Dallas Cowboys are fourth.
I want this podcast to start the way Always Sunny does from now on, where it's like the gang and then it always has a title. The title of this podcast should be The Gang Eats $60 Million Cheddar. Let's work on that, Emmy. All right. Who's your third best team then? Third best opening, I should say.
And the Raiders are rocketing up the board. The Jacksonville Jaguars are third.
This might be the only list the Raiders have ever been near the top on. Okay, so the Jags at three, even though they've got Trevor Lawrence, who was so generational that you were supposed to suck for him.
Yeah, absolutely. And by the way, Trevor Lawrence, who is not ever reached that apex moment that Dak Prescott did. So you're sitting there and you're going, well, why the hell? Wait a minute. Why is Dak and the Cowboys fourth? You know, Trevor just signed a 5-year, $275 million deal. So he's expensive too. Trevor's 25. Dak's 32. Trevor has now ended, obviously, a season with concussion. There are clearly some injury concerns. He's never reached that apex level. It's why he's third, despite the fact that he's 25 and still has considerable upside and a ceiling to reach. He's third because, number one, okay, let me explain why he's not in the top two. He's going to have an AC shoulder surgery, non-throwing shoulder, but still AC shoulder surgery this offseason. Still concerning. That's not good. We've definitely seen more injuries. He plays through them, but we've seen more injuries on the field that have affected his play. Still goes out there, but not nearly at the level that we would expect him to be at ultimately. The concussion he just sustained. Horrible, nasty, worrisome. You really hope, like, what's going to happen with the next concussion? Like, could this be something that turns into a Tua situation? You have to at least ask yourself now, because any concussion that knocks a guy out the way he got knocked out is as similar as it could be to Tua, just in terms of that single instance of the blow that he took to the head. So all those, yes, absolutely problematic. But again, he's 25 years old. He has not yet had a coach who I think has figured out the math to keep him healthy and reaching the ceiling at the same time. Doug Peterson, obviously, they had the stretch. They had the year in 2022 where you're like, oh, they're putting it all together. He's going to make it. He's going to turn the corner. 2023 happens. 2024 happens. It doesn't take place. But again, I think the fact that he's 25 mitigates some of that concern about the money that you're paying him. I do think there are some of the same concerns with Dak, and I do realize that Dak has played at a higher level, but I think Dak's injury situation that's now popped up a couple of times and the age on Dak, it factors for me. So I still think there's something there on the table for Trevor to be drawn out, and that's why I think he still deserves to be in the top three consideration.
And again, I remember when we were covering Trevor and it was he should challenge the legality in court of being prevented from going into the NFL after 1 year. It's how good he was supposed to be. I know we are not factoring in owners. I'm just going to say that this is just yet another example of just a poorly run franchise that doesn't seem invested in actually making the best out of what they have. And I said when he was drafted that, you know, Trevor Lawrence would be failed by the Jags before he would fail Jacksonville. I do believe that's happened here. They have failed their quarterback.
And again, we're not putting owners in this, but
correct.
Yeah, I mean, number seven, the Jets owner, Woody Johnson, not really in a great spot right now, right?
I mean, we can go up and down this list. There's some this is another conversation for another day. It's like maybe how do you fix a franchise when the owner's the problem? That's if we had the answer to that, then you know we'd be on Roger Goodell's speed dial. Okay, so now we're up to number two. Number two on the openings belongs to drumroll.
Las Vegas Raiders.
Huzzah! Let's go, baby.
The second most attractive quarterback situation for prospective head coaches. People are going to lose their minds over this, and I get it. I totally understand that. Here's the thing, though. Gardner Minshew he's a backup. It's just the reality. It is what he is. 29 when the season starts in 2025. But the cap pain that you incur, $10.8 million dead cap charge. And by the way, you could feasibly renegotiate with him knowing that he's going to be the backup quarterback for him. You could be just like, hey, you're going to take a pay cut. We're willing to let you go back out there. You know, we're just going to cut you. We'll take the $10.8 million hit, and you can go and find another position out in the NFL. You're probably going to end up being a backup, making backup money. But again, this is where we're at. To me, the reason why I put the Raiders at number two in the list, and again, this is just the quarterback situation, nothing else, right? If we factored the owners, they'd be last. Okay, they'd probably be seventh on this list because I am confident that Mark Davis is going to continue to screw things up 1 year after another. I think that they deserve number two because it's as close as you're going to get to a clean slate. It's as close as you're going to get to not having it's as close as you're going to get to not having to inflict a massive amount of financial pain to clear the decks. It's as close as you're going to getting the quarterback that you want in this draft. You are in position to get QB1. Right now, they would pick number two overall. There's some slight worry that obviously the Patriots have the number one overall pick and someone can move ahead of you. But if all things are equal right now, we're just talking about where you're drafting. You are positioned to decide who is the best quarterback in this draft and who's the best quarterback for us to build around and take us forward. And you get a rookie contract to deal with as well, which gives you nothing but flexibility across that roster in terms of extensions, in terms of going out in free agency and trying to shore up certain pieces. In this evaluation, and with head coaches that are coming into the league, depending on their stature and their age, if they have time to develop a program and put pieces in place, I think you should go for the clear the decks option. You should go for the cleanest possible scenario that you have in front of you. And to me, in terms of the quarterback spot, that's definitely the Raiders. It's the easiest one to zero out and start over without having to worry about any ties to future problems.
Well, for years, I've been telling Raiders fans in my mentions, every year when we get ready for the draft, I say, hey, just because you need a quarterback doesn't mean you reach for a quarterback. Be patient. You know, you got to have the right situation. Like, don't get a guy just because you need a guy. Get a guy because you love a guy. I preached all that. All that is out the window this year because you just have no other option. I do believe that at some point you have to turn around and say, yep, this is the year we're going all in. Having the first overall pick, the one thing that scares me for the Raiders is that they do have a game coming up against the Jags, right? Against Mac Jones and the Jags. So
right.
The Raiders don't need a clever moment here where they win a game they shouldn't win and suddenly they get the second best quarterback. I'm more comfortable in a world where they get the top pick. But I think you and I both agree that, frankly, Mark Davis has made it wildly clear that he wants Shadur. So
right.
At this point, knowing that Mark Davis has made it wildly clear that he wants Shadur, I got no choice as a fan. I got no choice but to turn around and be like, huzzah, I'm going to root for Shadur Sanders. I'm going to be the biggest Shadur Sanders fan in the world. For the organization, I do think you're right. The five-year window you get with the rookie contract, sort of a fresh restart, you just got to sort of rip the Band-Aid off. The one thing I constantly say is that the failings of the past have nothing to do with the regime of the current other than Mark Davis. So if you're Tom Telesco, if you're whoever the next head coach is, if Tom Telesco survives, if you're whoever is making this pick, Jamarcus Russell doesn't matter. You know, Todd Marinovich, like Raiders fans like me remember generations of quarterback failures.
Right.
None of that matters. You go into this year, clean slate, you get the quarterback position right, and all of a sudden it changes. It's just, it's going to be difficult to get the quarterback position right. And even if you do get it right, you're taking on quarterback coach combos that are just juggernauts.
But let me give you this too. And this is why I love the clean slate. You have the opportunity to do nothing too. You can say, hey, you know what? We got Minshew under contract for 2025. We can go ahead and ride this out and keep things neat and tidy. We go into 2025. We fail. We bottom out. Whatever the problems might be, we still have not lost our clean slate. It doesn't mean you necessarily have to engage it right now. You have that tool on the table. That's what I love about this for the Raiders. You can do something, absolutely. You have the decks are wide open for you, but you can also not do something. You can decide, we're going to go the opposite way. We're going to start to build up other parts of the team. We have Brock Bowers in place. Unbelievable. That's great. That's awesome. We have arguably one of the most dynamic mismatch players, maybe for the next 10 years. If what we're seeing so far from his rookie season is real, that's a hell of a piece to have on board. Okay. Now, how can you augment it? We have this high draft pick. We don't necessarily have to spend it on a quarterback. What other pieces are out there that are dynamic? Is it Travis Hunter? Is he available to us at the number two overall pick? The wonderful thing about that clean slate, and I keep saying this over and over again because that's the central point of why this matters, is that you can do anything with it. You don't have a Dak Prescott, you know, massive contract to pay for next year and the year after that, right? You don't have a ton of cap charge tied to a Derek Carr. You don't even have the Daniel Jones $22 million, you know, situation that is sitting there for the New York Giants. So I love the ability to be mobile, movable, versatile, and make decisions. And if I'm a head coach and I believe in myself, that's what I want in front of me on the quarterback depth chart.
I never thought a blank slate that way. You're going to get ripped on social media by Raiders fans that desperately want their favorite team, my favorite team, to take a quarterback. And the funny part about all of that is damned if you do and damned if you don't. If you take a quarterback and he wasn't worth taking, then everybody's going to get fired and your team's going to suck for the next 5 years. If you don't take a quarterback, probably going to suck next year. So it's a tough spot to be in. So that brings us to the number one overall, the best situation. I think my math tells me that it is the Chicago Bears. Why?
Yeah, that's correct. It's the Bears. Because Caleb Williams is 23. because I think when you've seen the remix of the coaching staff, you've already seen in the last couple of weeks him play better. He looks like he's getting coached. He looks like he's cleaning up some aspects of his play style. I think it's interesting that as soon as the offensive coordinator gets fired and they go to Caleb Williams and they say, okay, there's a part of your game you're not accessing right now. Your feet, you can move. You can be mobile. You can decide if there's not a decision to be made in front of me that immediately presents itself, run. It's okay. We're not going to be afraid of that right now. Make a play and don't necessarily feel like you got to make a play throwing the football. And right away, right off the bat, as soon as Shane Waldron went out the door, I was like, wow, he looks like all of a sudden he looks like he's accessing a dynamic part of his game that's been missing up until this point. So I think the last couple of weeks show you all that talent that was there before the draft, all the playmaking ability, all the things that you loved about him are still there. He's 23. You're on a rookie contract, which again is a massive, massive deal here for me, which gives you flexibility to do all kinds of things across that roster. If you take over the Bears and you go, well, I love Caleb and I've got this piece and this is amazing for me. His rookie contract lets you not love the rest of the team. It lets you tear it around. Tear it down around. If you go, hey, we have a 7-on-7 team, basically, and I got to make this an 11-on-11 team, then that means I'm going to have to start reversing some of these other decisions that are made and pound money into the offensive line. You can do that. Pound assets into the offensive line. You can do that. That's the flexibility that rookie contract gives you. And I think it's great that it's not just a rookie contract. It's a rookie contract with a guy who was deemed special and is still in his first year and has shown us special moments. I look at the Bears job again, just from the quarterback standpoint. And, you know, their team president, Kevin Warren, said he believes it'll be the most coveted job this offseason. I think from a quarterback standpoint, it should be because of that money, flexibility, and talent.
Yeah. I mean, let's not get it twisted. If Caleb Williams were back in the draft today, if there was a way to put him back in the NFL draft, he would get selected before Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward draft.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I think he would go first this year. I think we'd go first next year. You'd have to tell me right now who is the college quarterback who you're like, I would take that guy ahead of Caleb Williams, knowing what you know about those college quarterbacks right now.
We've seen a little snippet of Arch Manning, but we don't really know.
Arch has barely played, and we're trying to make him the second coming. Yeah, I believe in Arch, but like let's calm it down a little bit. And I think that comes back to something that you and I talked about a lot, which is like you can't just sit here after half of a season or most of a season and tell me that suddenly a guy that was so good, he was so generational that everybody wanted to suck just to get him. Now all of a sudden it's like, well, he's really not that great. No. At this point, what hasn't been great is the Bears and their infrastructure around the quarterback. I still think Caleb Williams has plenty of time to prove to the world how absolutely great he can be.
I will ask you this question. This is doing a baseline. Who's their interim coach right now?
I mean, yeah, Thomas Brown, like, which is like,
And what has Thomas Brown done with Caleb? We've seen Thomas Brown draw positive things out of Caleb, right? I mean, I don't think there's any question that once Thomas Brown got his hands on Caleb from a play calling standpoint, it changed, I feel like, the direction of where Caleb's arrow was pointed. You know, there were times where the arrow was down. There was times it was flat. I feel like it's up again. And to me, again, if you're a coach and you're coming in, you're going, I'm the guy, I have the confidence in myself. You've seen the kid respond to proper coaching. So I think it's such a no-brainer that Chicago's number one.
Hey, we should remember, too, that, you know, I've said this repeatedly. I don't think Bo Nix is Bo Nix without Sean Payton. That's part of why this is working. Yeah, so find Caleb's Sean Payton. Go find the guy that speaks his love language, knows how to get the most out of him, and then all of a sudden, we'll look at this differently. This is like the flag I plant all the time. Coaching matters. Like, coaching the right guys the right way is a bigger deal than any of us want to admit. Emmy and Stone are the biggest of deals. They are better than $60 million cheddar. We appreciate all the work they put into this show constantly. Follow us on social media. You know where to find us. And don't forget, we're back on Sundays. If you listen this far, rate, review, subscribe. Means a lot. Helps us out a lot in this process. Most importantly, we just appreciate that you guys take the time to share a little time with us every single week. As always, on behalf of Charles Robinson, I'm Jason Fitz. Thanks so much for hanging out with us. We appreciate you.